Hello, this is Claire Thayer from MCOL, and I am welcoming Cora Tejas, President and CEO at Sterling HSA. Cora is here with us today to talk about health savings accounts. Her complete presentation is available for download on the Consumerism 2010 Web Summit site. And before we get started, Cora's going to tell us a little bit about her company and before we kind of launch into our discussion about the status of HSAs.
Thank you, Claire. Well, Sterling HSA is a privately held, financially self-sustaining, and independent administrator of HSA and HRA accounts. We've been in business since 2004. We are payer independent, meaning that we administer HSAs on behalf of our clients who choose whichever health plan works for them. Our company specializes in high-touch, high-tech HSA services.
All right, thank you. Now, given these difficult economic times, how have health savings accounts fared?
Well, the headline news is that HSAs continue to grow, despite or maybe because of the poor economy. High deductible plans are more appealing to employers now because typically they cost less than traditional plans. I want to quote from a national study that just got released. Nationally, 12 million Americans have HSAs as of the end of January 2010. This according to the latest annual Consumer Health Savings Update 2010. More than 1,000 banks and credit unions now provide custodial services to those accounts. And the same study noted that HSAs brought in $8.4 billion in deposits to U.S. banks. Think about that, Claire. $8.4 billion at a time when the economy was really in bad shape. The average large HSA bank, this study quoted, saw a 22% increase in HSA accounts in the past year. Our company, Sterling HSA, was also pleased to see a 39% increase in the number of HSA accounts that we administered from 2008 to 2009. HSA deposits increased by 41% during the same time period. What I think is remarkable about this result is that this activity occurred during one of the most challenging financial times in our country. So among other things, what this tells me is that there is enduring appeal of HSAs in bad times and in good times.
Thank you. And what are some of the key drivers impacting HSA growth?
The most significant driver of HSA growth is the cost of the underlying high deductible insurance plan compared to traditional plans. And you know, Claire, this finding has not changed since I've been giving talks about HSAs. If the insurance premium for the HDHP plans is priced at least 15% less than the traditional plans, then employers have every motivation to move. They're going to adopt HDHP plans and probably fund the HSA accounts of their employees. But, Claire, benefit design is absolutely critical to HSA growth. If the employer chooses a high-deductible plan and promotes a program where all the premium savings are realized by the employer, that is, there's no employer funding at all of the employee's HSA account, then HSA growth will be poor. You know, we saw this happen last year with a large employer. The insurance premium savings was 40%. That's pretty significant. Unfortunately, the employer designed the plan such that the employees saw no funding of their HSA account from the employer, but they did see a modest decrease in their out-of-pocket costs for the insurance coverage. It didn't surprise me at all that very few employees out of that workforce numbering in the thousands opened an HSA account. So, you know, benefit design is very important to driving HSA growth. And, of course, the state of the economy is another driver. I do believe, however, that as the economy improves and employers add to the workforce, then seeding HSA accounts become more economically feasible. And when that happens, I suspect we'll see even more robust HSA growth.
And what changes in HSA consumer behavior are you starting to see?
Well, you know, conventional wisdom would suggest that in difficult economic times, account holders would drain their HSA accounts to pay for COBRA insurance premiums and or pay more medical expenses. And because Sterling is in a position to review and pay providers directly, we've certainly noticed certain trends. One, we've noticed an increase in the number of requests for payment of COBRA premiums. So if people become unemployed and they need cash out of their HSA accounts to pay for insurance premiums. We've also noticed more termination of accounts. So driven by distressed employers who either closed their doors because of the economy or who stopped offering health insurance coverage as a means of surviving a tough economy, or still other employers who decreased the level of funding toward employee HSA accounts. What's interesting, Claire, is that despite these trends, our account holders continue to add deposits to their accounts. Our average asset balance per account holder increased from 2008. Our average balance is now at $1,945 per account holder. There are two other points of interest about our account holders. They absolutely value ease of use and internet access. 80% of our clients have enrolled online and regularly make transactions online. So in addition to viewing their account activity online, they instruct Sterling HSA to pay their providers, and they move money between their personal account and their HSA account. So they clearly value the convenience of internet access. They could do this at any time that they wish. Debit card use has increased from 37% of all disbursements in 2008 at Sterling to 46% in 2009. Again, I think what this tells me is that convenience and ease of use are critical attributes of our debit card program.
And what trends are you seeing now in employer adoption?
Well, I see HSAs having continuing appeal in the small group market. We've certainly grown significantly in that market segment. However, and I'm speaking particularly here in California, we've seen steep rate renewals in 2010 for the high deductible plans that are aimed at the small group market. And as you can imagine, it's having the predictable effect of slowing down HSA adoption. As a result, we're seeing renewed interest in health reimbursement arrangements, or HRAs, partially in response to these increases, partially in response to the tight economy and the employer's desire to hang on to cash. With respect to the mid-market, I think reasonable and attractive pricing of the underlying insurance plan is there. So we're seeing accelerated movement from traditional plans to HSA-compatible plans. I want to emphasize again, similar to what I had said in the beginning of this podcast, that the number one, number two, and number three reason for employer movement towards HSA-qualified plans is pricing of the insurance plan. So if the pricing is unattractive, that is, the high-deductible insurance products are priced at a little below, but you know, not a huge gap between traditional plans, then HSA growth will be stagnant. And you can certainly see why. For a lot of our employer clients who are moving from an HMO or a low-deductible plan, this is a big cultural shift, and it requires that the employers expend some amount of time and energy to explaining and about this change and educating their employees. And if the premium difference isn't big enough to make it financially worth their while to do this, then the employer will simply say, no, I'm not going to do it this time, and just maybe wait another year or so when pricing of the underlying insurance plan is more attractive.
Thank you. And our last question is, how has the debate on healthcare reform affected HSAs?
Well, I haven't seen any pullback in HSA adoption as a result of the ongoing debate about healthcare reform. As I've said, if there's been any pullback, it's all driven by economic forces. But back to healthcare reform, as you know, the proposals currently under discussion haven't targeted HSAs. In fact, there were only two very minor items that made it to the House and Senate bills. These are a higher penalty for non-qualified expenses and a ban on HSA expenditures for over-the-counter drugs. Within the last, 24 hours, President Obama has proposed that HSA-qualified plans be among those offered to individuals and small groups that participate in the proposed exchange. that's a pretty big shift on the part of the president. So if health reform passes and this part of it is included, that is HSA qualified plans being among the approved plans offered through the exchange, then I can see increased growth for HSAs. And if this happens, that is, we see more people opening HSA accounts, and by doing so, practicing more cost-conscious behavior, then by golly, we should see a key benefit of having HSAs. That is, people are more cost-conscious, they reduce unnecessary utilization, which then should lead to a reduction in costs and the underlying insurance premium. I firmly believe that if more of the population adopts HSAs, then it would go a long way towards bending the cost curve. And it's frankly, Claire, a key reason why I'm so bullish about HSAs.
Thank you, Cora. And for our audience, you've been listening to Cora Tejas, President and CEO of Sterling HSA. Her complete summit presentation is available for download on the Consumerism 2010 Web Summit site. This concludes our podcast.